Our opening words this morning are by the Reverend Gretchen Haley and are titled Space for New Possibility. What's going to happen? Will everything be okay? What can I do? In these days, we find ourselves too often stuck with these questions on repeat. What's going to happen? Will everything be okay? What can I do? We grasp at signs and markers, articles of news and analysis, Facebook memes and forwarded emails, as if the new zodiac, capable of forecasting all that life may yet bring our way, as if we could prepare, as if life had made any promises of making sense or turning out the way we thought, as if we are not also actors in this still unfolding story. For this hour we gather, to surrender to the mystery, to release ourselves from the needing to know, the yearning to have it all already figured out, and also the burden of believing we either have it all under control or none. Here in our song and our silence, our stories and our sharing, we make space for a new breath, a new healing, a new possibility to take root. That is courage forged in the fire of our coming together and felt in the spirit that comes alive in this act of faith, that we believe still a new world is possible, that we are creating it already here and now. Come, let us worship together. These are the words for our chalice lighting from Kelly Wiseman Aspruth Jackson. Does the match love the wick? Does the wick love the wax or the air it consumes? Yes, without question. To melt together, to burn together, to change together, the pieces of the candle must love each other, though not necessarily wisely and not necessarily well. Our words for your prayer or meditation this morning are titled A Prayer for the Possibility of Both And by Lynn Cox. Spirit of life, ever adapting and renewing, we come together this morning with yearnings that do not match. We yearn for stability, for even one moment of feeling like we know what is going on, for the ability to predict and prepare for what is coming next. Yet we also yearn for change. We ache for a world that turns aside from racism, violence, dehumanization, and disregard for suffering. We pray for a change in the illness, grief, isolation, incarceration, and vulnerability of our loved ones. We reach for connections that will remind us that we are worthy as we are, and we reach for connections that will help us to become our best selves. Hold us in the heart of both and. Cradle us in the mystery and possibilities of each. Cherish us in the eternal presence of love and encourage us on the path of growth and development. As individuals and as a people, help us to become who we are called to be. Lead us to open pathways to deeper wisdom through reconciliation, self-respect, and mutual respect, compassion, owning and making amends for our mistakes. Source of wonder, move us to express and live in gratitude for the beauty of this world, the loving people in our lives, and this day of possibility. To this we add the meditations of our hearts as we enter into a time of silence. Turning to One Another by Margaret Wheatley. There is no power greater than a community discovering what it cares about. Ask, what is possible? Not, what's wrong? Keep asking. Notice what you care about. Assume that many others share your dreams. Be brave enough to start a conversation that matters. Talk to people you know. Talk to people you don't know. Talk to people you never talk to. Be intrigued by the differences you hear. Expect to be surprised. Treasure curiosity more than certainty. Invite in everybody who cares to work on what's possible. Acknowledge that everyone is an expert about something. Know that creative solutions come from new connections. Remember, you don't fear people whose story you know. Real listening always brings people closer together. Trust that meaningful connections, meaningful conversations can change your world. Rely on human goodness. Stay together. Thus ends the reading. In our classes for new members and for members who just want to come back and learn more about Unitarian Universalism and our church, I spend some time talking about what makes something a religion, what makes Unitarian Universalism a religion. Because by many people's definitions of religion, we are not one. A standard Christian definition of religion is a group of people who come together as a group and share a set of beliefs relating to God or to gods, plural. This is a definition that you might find in the dictionary as well, but it's a definition that works really well to define Christianity and not as well to define some other religions, and particularly ours. Instead, I use a definition from a world religion textbook that I used when I taught world religions up at Mount Wachusett Community College. It's by Michael Malloy. He says that religions customarily exhibit some of 8 different characteristics, and not all religions have all 8 of them, but they usually have some conglomeration of them. They are a belief system, a community, central myths, by which he means central stories that they share. Myths may or may not be true. Rituals, ethics, characteristic emotional experiences, and here I quote, he says, among the emotional experiences typically associated with religions are dread, guilt, awe, mystery, devotion, conversion, rebirth, liberation, ecstasy, bliss, and inner peace. Material expression, like buildings or art, and sacredness, where a distinction is made between the sacred and the ordinary. As you can see from this list, there are several things that we hold as a religion that help define us as one. We have a system of ethics evidenced in our shared principles. We have a community. We have rituals like lighting the chalice and flower communion. We have some characteristic emotional experiences to some degree. We definitely have material expression through buildings and art. And in fact, it's one and only one piece of the definition that it's hard to argue that we have, and that is a shared belief system. So it's easy to see why some people have trouble understanding us as a religion. They've accepted the definition that is most prevalent in the dominant religion in our society as the one by which all religions are judged. Rather than having a set of beliefs in Unitarian Universalism, I think we are all about the questions. As our closing hymn will say, to question truly is an answer. And by this I mean, however, not just that we allow questions to be asked here, which we do. We do that. But I think our relationship to questions goes deeper than that. To some extent, inherent in our faith is an understanding that there will always be questions. As James Luther Adams said in one of his 5 smooth stones, revelation is not sealed. It's not just that you're invited to have questions here, but also that we don't answer them, or at least we don't answer them in simple ways. We give multiple answers. We give more questions. We give possibilities. We give paradoxes. It's like when you go to your therapist. What should I do about my life? What do you think I should do? You might ask. What do you think you should do? They might answer. It's annoying, right? But they're doing their job. I do the same thing. What do you think happens after I die? You might ask me. And I'll probably say, what do you think happens after we die? And eventually, I'll tell you what I think, but I'll tell you right now, it'll be unsatisfactory. It'll be unsatisfactory because I lack conviction. I am not sure. And I cannot tell you 100% that this is what's going to happen. And it's unsatisfactory because you will not be sure that I am right. You will still have questions. Perhaps you've noticed by now that in this service, most of the music asked questions, and the opening words asked questions, and the chalice lighting asked questions, and our story asked questions, and our reading too asked questions, and our closing words will too. This is a service built around the idea that we ask questions, and there are no answers. The answers, my friends, are blowing in the wind. And that is all. Part of this belief in the questions, in this place of curiosity and wonder, goes along with our belief in the scientific principle. In many religions, a theory is something you answer with your belief. In science, it's something held much higher, like the theory of evolution. It's something which has been tested over and over again, but which we still have a lot of questions about. An article in Scientific American explains this better than I could, and they write, "Part of the problem with the word theory is that the word theory means something very different in lay language than it does in science. A scientific theory is an explanation of some aspect of the natural world that has been substantiated through repeated experiments or testing. But to the average Jane or Joe, a theory is just an idea that lives in someone's head rather than an explanation rooted in experiment and testing." We're a religion that is more comfortable in the scientific process, with the living in the space of having questions that we examine through repeated testing, rather than living in the space of declarative answers. So again, it goes beyond simply saying that it's okay to have questions, and it moves into the space of saying, while maintaining a non-creedal nature, so that you can argue with me about this, that you must have questions here. Your certainty will be challenged much more often here than your questioning. And while there may be some things that you are certain of, it's almost imperative that there be some spaces of doubt and questioning in your faith too, for this to be the most comfortable of religious homes for you. This is why I've said that not everybody is cut out to be a Unitarian Universalist, and why we're never going to become the religion for everyone, and that's okay. Because there are people for whom the degree of uncertainty that we live with in our faith is uncomfortable. There is a need for answers that some people experience. And when we don't give answers in our faith, that's sometimes when it would be the most comforting for some people. I wish I could sometimes. When people come to me with questions of why evil exists, I wish I could say with confidence that it is part of some greater divine plan. When people come to me asking whether or not they'll see someone again in an afterlife, I wish I knew with confidence that we'd all be reunited in the great hereafter. There is a great comfort in having those kinds of solid answers at your fingertips and having the certainty in their truth. And that will never be here, I think, although I'm not certain. And in those times, Unitarian Universalism can be an uncomfortable place, particularly for those wanting strongly for solid answers. Paradoxically, I think our religion argues that we have to have a space for questioning. And by questioning, I don't just mean doubt, although there's a place for that too, and I talked about that back in the fall. I mean a place where we hold open the possibility not just that something is wrong or doubtful, but also the possibility that it's right or true. I think we have to embody a space of paradox to some extent, where the ancient stories are both true and not true at the same time, where the box of faith is open and closed. And that's because when we believe knowing that our belief itself is a paradox. When we hold a belief in God, it's while knowing that God is inexplicable and unknowable and impossible. God has to be able to make a mountain that God can't lift, but be able to lift any mountain. God has to be able to see all futures and yet offer us free will to choose our future. God has to be all good, but create evil. God has to be able to create the laws that God can't break, but be able to do anything. To believe in God is to believe in paradox and to live in that uncertainty and that unknowing. The irony is faith takes questioning. Living in faith takes living with questions. But to believe in science, you have to believe in paradox too. The cat is both dead and alive until we open the box. The universe is infinite. To get anywhere, we have to go halfway there first, and we therefore can't get there at all. Whether you approach your questions from the side of God or the universe, the mystery is that our brains cannot understand it. We can't really hold the infinite nature of space in our minds any more than we can hold the omnipotence of God. So we have to, in our faith, hold space for paradox, for that which goes beyond understanding, which lives forever in the realm of questions. We have to live in the space where to truly question is an answer. The beauty of holding space open to the questions is that there is the realm of possibility, the realm of the imagination, the realm of what is possible instead of what is. That's why I like science fiction so much, actually. It takes something that is futuristic, is possible in some distant imagination, and it uses that to shine light back on today, not just in terms of having us imagine what we can become, but illuminating what we are. It's one way to look at answers, possible answers, and not certain answers at all, to the big questions. How is justice accomplished? What is the nature of humanity? How is peace found? How do we save our earth? What is possible from where we are right now? These are, of course, just another set of questions, but they open up the imagination. They open up the possibility. The story I have about opening up to the possible comes from Robert Fulghum. It's a little silly, as many of Robert Fulghum's are, but I think it illustrates something beyond the ridiculous. It seems he gave a ride to some college students once, and he asked them what they were up to, and they answered they were eating a chair. Have you heard this story before? They were eating a chair. Their philosophy professor had given them the following assignment: do something unique and memorable, not dangerous or foolish, but something imaginative, inventive, and instructive. Write it up and explain what was learned and how it might apply to their philosophy of life. So they decided, we're going to eat a chair. And they took an unvarnished wooden chair and the advice of their physician about how to do this and that it was safe, and they ground it up slowly every day and took the sawdust and sprinkled it in their oatmeal or over their pizza or whatever they were eating and ate a little bit of the chair every day. But what happened as they ate a chair, other than just saying to themselves over and over again, why are we doing this? What does this mean? Is that they learned something about incremental progress. They learned something about doing things slowly and making commitment over time. They learned something about the absurd. They learned something about possibility. Most of us, when we think about what is possible, we're not going to end up eating a chair. And perhaps our questions just give us more questions than answers. I mean, why a chair and not a small table or something else? Why eat it? Why? Why? But today is about imagination, about possibility, about living in the questions, about staying in that place of uncertainty, of possibility, of paradox. Because I leave you there with the inexplicable. The answers are blowing in the wind.